Welcome to the Crude Life Podcast. My name is Jason Spies, and on this episode of the Crude Life, we talk with William Prentice, the CEO of the Meridian Energy Group, about the Davis Refinery, the first greenfield refinery constructed in the United States since 1976. We talk with William Prentice about technology, construction timelines, and public events, all surrounding the first greenfield refinery to be constructed in the United States in over 40 years. In just a moment, the CEO of Meridian Energy Group, William Prentice, and the latest on the Davis Refinery coming to Belfield, North Dakota.
Well, it's been a little bit since we've talked. I know you had a water permit town hall, I guess it turned into, with some people asking questions and getting some information satisfied out there at the Davis Refinery coming to Belfield, North Dakota. How about an update? And maybe we'll start with the water permit and then kind of go from there.
Sure, Jason. Yeah, the water permit was for water allocation out of an aquifer that's not used for any agricultural or potable purposes. And so I think we're heading down that road to be able to utilize that water resource, which will allow us to provide makeup water to the refinery without impacting existing uses. You know, that was just a public hearing to get comments, and the permit process for that permit is ongoing.
One of the nice things about this program is, you know, we've been following kind of the coming of the Davis Refinery because it's going to impact the Bakken exponentially in a way that I don't think a lot of people have comprehended yet because, well, once the ripple starts, it happens pretty fast. So how are we looking at the home stretch here? I think, you know, we're looking at 2017 as kind of being that year we're going to break some ground. Is that still looking like the case?
Sure. The groundbreaking has to wait for the award of the permit to construct from the North Dakota Department of Health. That's our air quality permit. You know, we don't have a right to opine on when that should occur. As a minor source, it's our understanding that that'll occur during the early summer. Once that occurs, we're right into the field, and we're trying to get as much construction done this summer as we possibly can and try to get into operation on the first phase of the project in early 2018.
So much goes on behind the scenes with these different things. You know, I mean, you mentioned you got to wait till the health department gets a permit okay with the air quality. And, you know, we just got done talking about some water permitting. Talk to me a little bit about the behind the scenes work that's being done on getting this refinery.
Sure. There is a lot of activity. We have over 30 people that are working on this project right now. And that doesn't count the people at various engineering firms that are working on our behalf, nor the people at our investment bankers that are working on the funding for the project. You know, that engineering is, you know, just intricately intertwined with the permit process because we have to do quite a bit of design of both the initial phase and the full refinery in order to obtain the permits. So a lot of engineering was completed prior to the end of the year. Then after we had applied for the air quality permit in October, we went into detailed design for the first phase of the project. And some of that engineering allowed us to actually come up with ideas to modify the phase two design to even further reduce emissions. So we now have an amendment to the air quality permit that's going to be filed in the next day or two. And that's going to show a dramatic reduction in the permitted emissions that we're requesting for both phases of the refinery. But, you know, all that occurs because all the people working on engineering, designing equipment, getting the process and the controls laid out. And that'll allow us, once the permit to construct is awarded, to immediately move to the field.
One of the things that stands out to me about this whole process is, you know, when we talk about behind the scenes, is the technology side of things, you know, which is going to obviously be implemented into the stage, I guess, if we're saying behind the scenes on the other thing. You know, talking with Edward Martinez from Zia Environmental Consulting and Engineers, He mentioned about how a lot of the plumbing and just kind of the pipes and a lot of the, I guess, things that people wouldn't necessarily understand is going to do so much to keep those emissions down. And then when you layer in the technology, I guess how much of the technology and the permitting are kind of going hand to hand? I would imagine you guys are constantly having to refile things because it's so advanced.
This is a subject that I could spend all day on, and I'm glad you guys had a chance to talk to Eddie Martinez Azia, because he is a world class resource to the industry and has been extremely helpful to us. And part of the process here is trying to get out of the industry's mode of taking 50-year-old technology and putting a air quality or water quality band-aid on it. We've gone through an entire process of reviewing, designing parts of the refinery to somewhat older specifications, and then rejecting all of that because there's so much that is now available. The issue has been for us is all of these technologies that have been developed over the last 50 years to make refineries cleaner have never been comprehensively applied to a single grassroots project. And that's what we're doing. And it's kind of the first time in the industry that that's happened. So the opportunity has been very, very gratifying, but it's been hard to grasp when you approach a project like this in a historically consistent way. And that's the evolution we've gone through over the last 6 to 9 months, is turning from a more classic refinery design with all of the best available control technology added to it, and turning that into a pure, clean refinery design that we now have come up with. And that's going to be reflected in the amendment to the PTC that is filed here in the next couple of days. And I think it's an industry-changing event in technology.
Explain this amendment, if you would, kind of a brief elevator pitch or a bullet point of that amendment that you just spoke about.
Well, sure. The refinery that we had designed up to October of last year, when we filed the original permit to construct permit application with the state, was a very clean refinery. It's the first time that any kind of a major refinery has ever filed for permits based on being a minor source. A minor source requires less time frame, let's say, or a shorter schedule for approval, but still has to file all the same support and engineering documents to show that we know what we're talking about when we say that we're going to emit a certain level of a pollutant, like a carbon monoxide. Now, that application established us firmly as a minor source. What we've done since then is the design changes have simplified the plant, and in some cases have reduced even those low emissions by 30%. So, the bar is being raised ever higher for this industry. If the entire refining industry were to go back and do this, the amount of pollution put into the air in the United States by the domestic refining industry would be dramatically reduced.
Do you see that happening at all? I guess have to speculate. The question I was going to ask was gratifying you feel that it is that you're kind of blazing a new path in energy and environment. And so right away, I guess when I thought of that, I thought, well, they might actually put that as the standard in the industry. And that's kind of bittersweet, isn't it? That on one hand, you're blazing a new path, but at the other hand, I guess, some new regulations could come out of this.
Well, I think that, from now on, with what we've done, people are going to look at other projects differently. And people that want to build new refineries will probably end up being held to a higher standard. But, keep in mind, Jason, that Meridian is a startup company. We don't have a vested interest in any existing assets or any existing legacy technology. Startup companies in the United States throughout history have been the ones that bear the brunt of technological innovation. So that's our job, so to speak, is to change this business.
And that's really a great way to look at it. I can remember interviewing the CEO of Appario, which got into a great niche with black boxes and surveillance securities, that sort of thing. And these are former John Deere executives and that sort of thing. So they went from, you know, big corporations. And he explained about the value of the smaller and the startup company that can move on a dime, because the big companies, it might take a year for them to make a single change just because they have such a well-oiled machine that they can't turn on a dime. So I think it's pretty important that, you know, the information you just said about how you guys, you know, being a startup company or a smaller company, that you can be nimble, and you see the advantages of that. Are you finding that being able to have the nimbility or the dexterity or the fluidity is really becoming a crucial part of this whole process?
Well, absolutely. Early on in the design, as an example, it became apparent that we could make this whole thing work out better by dividing the project up into two phases. The initial phase is a 27,500 barrel per day hydro skimming plant, and then double capacity and increased complexity for phase two. That entire decision, which at a major oil company would take months and months, took us about a half an hour once we had the numbers assembled. So, you know, you just have a company that can turn on a dime, but still absorb the useful information and lessons of the industry and apply them to a new project. Again, there's nothing wrong with the way the big companies are doing things. It's just not the way we're doing it. And it's up to society to judge how they want the refining industry to behave after that.
And I think that's a great point. There's no right or wrong on this. There's just different roles when it comes to the creation and the execution and the implementation of technologies, you know, whether it be new or cutting edge or even repackaging existing. Without getting into your finances, I guess, how are you guys doing on securing some product for the new refinery? I know that you're probably not at 100% full yet, since you guys haven't broken a shovel. But at the same time, I'm sure you guys are signing a few contracts here and there for getting some product in there. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's an easy thing for companies in our business to forget about, is that once you get the plant built, you know, that part of the thing is literally cast in stone, and that it's concrete and steel. And the ongoing viability of the company is based on the marketing, you know, crude purchases and product marketing. So we've been out there consistently running around in North Dakota securing crude contracts. We're covered on the offtake. I think we have contracts covering about 67% of our product production from phase one, and in negotiation for the rest of phase one and a good portion of the additional phase two product that's coming out. You know, we'll probably finish that up by, let's say, end of May, plenty of time before we start construction. The crude side's been very interesting because, you know, the DAPL pipeline looks like it's going forward, so a lot of guys are going to be able to jump on that and get out to markets for the crude, and are not so worried about finding a home with a refinery that's local. But there are a lot of guys who can't get on that pipeline, and, you know, we provide a home for that. You know, it's very similar to what happened with the grain industry in the Dakotas and other parts of the Midwest, where it was a commodity-based business, and people were always looking for markets that were dependable. And then along comes the fuel alcohol industry, where you can do value-added processing there right where the grain is grown. And we provide the same service to local crude producers that a lot of the alcohol producers provide for local grain. And, you know, again, it's part of growing the economy in North Dakota that we're proud to be a part of.
And this is still going to be a full-on refinery. It's not just diesel, or it's not just one product you guys are offering, you know, several different types of finished products. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, even the initial phase produces gasoline blending stock, diesel, some kerosene for jet fuel, and our atmospheric tank bottoms, it turns out, are qualified to be low sulfur fuel oil, so we have a home for that too. Phase two is a much more complete set of refined products, including propane and so forth. And, you know, we also have more flexibility. So depending on seasonality, we can change the product output in phase two quite a bit.
Looking at the calendar here, you know, I was thinking about your guys' water event, your water permit allocation event that you had, and quite a few people showed up. I understand around 70, 75, 80 people, including the mayor of Belfield, showed up for that. And looking at the Bakken Barbecue coming here in June, and we got the Williston Basin Conference coming up, it looks like first part of May here. How about you guys? Are you guys doing any sort of events coming up in the near future, or are you going to be attending anything? I guess talk to me a little bit about what you guys got going community wise over the next 6 months.
Well, you know, we've been aware of the fact that we need to kind of ramp up our local engagement as we get further along in the permitting. You know, we have I think in a couple weeks from now, Adam Williams, who's our corporate communications director, has set up a couple of opportunities for people to come and ask us questions about the project. I think that's being set up to take place at the old theater in Belfield. Then as we get closer to a hearing on the air quality permit, we'll go ahead and have additional opportunities to answer questions and so forth leading up to that event. And I think that's going to be, early April, so towards the end of May, I think we're expecting that to take place. Between now and the end of June, we're going to be ramping up our presence, if for no other reason than a lot of our people are starting to move up to the Belfield area for the beginning of construction.
Well, make sure keep us posted, and we'll keep an eye out, too, to get the information out there to let people know about what I consider one of the more exciting things happening in the Bakken. And I honestly, since $100 oil, because this is something that's going to be around. You know, you talk about 20 years of harvest in the Bakken, like they've talked about, you know, as far as even if oil prices stay around where they're at, they're still going to be drilling for 20 years. And to have a refinery out there, adding thousands of jobs to the community is such a not only a symbolic gesture, but it is a economic influencer that Western North Dakota has not seen in 20, 30, 40, 50 years, in my opinion. This is up there with one of the major employers in the state, especially when you have the economic ripple effect. Just kind of some final thoughts from you about just whatever direction you want to go on the refinery and where it's going in the future there in North Dakota.
Well, just a couple of thoughts. And as a company, it's important to remember the first principles. And this company was founded by a family partnership, the Davis Family Partnership, a collection of a couple hundred cousins who all came from North Dakota. You know, part of three generations that it's a typical issue in the Dakotas where people go to school and graduate, and then they end up, part of every family leaves the state to find opportunity. And the whole idea here was, in addition to that partnership going back and reacquiring some agricultural interest from generations before, to create an opportunity for people to find jobs and stay in this area. And, 200 permanent jobs at the refinery, that spells out to 2,400 permanent jobs in the community. It's an objective that I'm pretty sure that we're going to be able to accomplish here this year. That said, the refinery depends on a very healthy oil industry in North Dakota. And I think the last 2 years have shown that the Bakken oil production is quite frankly indestructible. As times got tough, the Bakken producers, some of them had some very difficult financial issues to resolve, but they kept producing and they've gotten stronger and more efficient. And I don't think we're going to see a situation over the next 20 years where the Bakken production is threatened. We've seen estimates from the Department of Energy showing that they predict that the Bakken could go up to 2 million barrels per day. And I think that's fantastic. And I think the Bakken is destined to be very productive, very profitable for my lifetime. And the refinery is going to help them there.
And that was the CEO of the Meridian Energy Group, William Prentice. Thank you, folks, for joining us this episode of The Crude Life. Be sure to support our sponsors, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and be happy. My name is Jason Spies. We'll see you next time.
That holds us laughing. And here's to the sound of one hand clapping. And here's to not letting this moment pass. And here's to carrying the weight of the world. And here's to screaming, yeah, never being heard. And here's to not letting this moment pass.
My name is Otis, and I am the host of the Kids in Capitalism KidCast. Let me tell you about one of our sponsors. Hatch Realty is in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Call Eric Hatch or anyone on the Hatch Realty team with any real estate question. They want to be a resource and connection for you. That's Hatch Realty, 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572. Hatch Realty in the business of helping people. They just happen to sell real estate. Hatch Realty, tell them Otis sent you.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.